We left to go get our crap from the river packed up.
Cool. You guys just bringing the boat or are you staying?
I reckon we'll stay here.
Livingston and Sheffield made it clear that our services aren't needed anymore.
Yeah, apparently they've figured out the old man's an ass, Mike said.
Really? They don't want you guys around?
Thad asked.
Ah, they'll get over it. I don't want to live at that damn armory anyway. You got a place around here we can use if this fire doesn't burn us alive?
Sarge said.
I looked at Danny.
What do you think?
He thought for a minute.
How about that one you guys found all the food in?
That'd be a good one, I said, then looked at Sarge.
You'll like this place. It's pretty cool.
Good. Where is it?
I'll ride a four-wheeler over. Just follow me.
Sarge nodded and got back in the truck.
Danny, where you want this boat?
Pointing at an open spot in the pole barn, he said,
Back it in over there.
Sarge nodded and started maneuvering the trailer around. Ted was behind him guiding it in. He got it in place on the first try and Ted quickly unhooked it from the truck. Then they all got back in the Hummer. Jumping on one of the ATVs, I rode through the cut in the fence to get my picks. Getting them out of the house, I rode out through the gate and the Hummer followed me.
Looks like a nice place, Ted said.
It is. Real nice house, I replied.
What's up with the windows? Mike asked.
That's one of the cool things here. They have some sort of security film on them.
Why aren't you guys staying here? Sarge asked.
We only got into it recently, after we had already settled in.
Sarge held out his hand.
Key?
I pulled the picks from my back pocket.
Little harder than that.
You gotta pick the lock?
Ted asked.
I nodded, and he held out his hand.
You pick locks?
I asked.
What do you think?
And damn, did he.
Ted was in the door in under 2 minutes. We opened the garage door and some of the windows in the house to air it out. Then we gathered in the garage.
Will this work? I asked.
Yeah, this is great, Mike said.
I think we can make it do, Sarge said with a smile.
So what are you guys going to do for now? I asked.
Before we unload anything, we need to think about this fire.
Be a waste of time to unload just to have to pack it up again, Sarge said.
Supper's around 5:30. Let's hash it out then.
I don't think we've got much time beyond that, I said.
Good deal. We'll be there.
When I got back, the guys were unloading all of the guns from the camp. There was nearly every kind of gun imaginable. Shotguns of all varieties, bolt-action rifles, semi-autos, a slew of pistols, and a bunch of AR and AK variants. A nice double barrel caught Dad's eye. Holding the smoke pole up, he looked at it.
That's nice. I like that.
Take it, Danny said.
Yeah, take it if you want it, I added.
You sure?
Thad asked. Danny pointed at a pile of guns in the back of the truck, waiting to be unloaded.
Yeah, Sarge made it clear that they're ours for the keeping.
Thad smiled.
All right, good deal.
How are the girls doing on that tractor? I asked Thad.
Good. They're naturals.
Just as I thought, the guns filled the closet in the downstairs bedroom, so much so that we actually had to pile the ammo up outside of it. Mel and Bobby watched us as we made trip after trip through the house with guns and never said a word. Once the guns were all in the closet, they came into the room.
Do we even want to know where all that came from? Mel asked.
We got them from the armory. Sarge gave them to us, I replied.
Bobby walked up and looked in the closet.
That is a lot of guns, even for you guys.
I had to chuckle about that one. While neither of us had that many to begin with, everyone acted like we were forming a militia. None of us thought we had that many, but this was a lot of guns.
What in the world are you going to do with that many guns? Mel asked.
Nothing for now, but you never know, I replied.
Yeah, in this world, they're worth more than money, Danny added. Damn right they are. We could probably get anything we wanted trading these off, Thad said.
What are you going to do if we have to leave? You just loaded them in here. Why not leave them in the truck? Bobby asked.
We're hoping we don't need to leave. Besides, I'd rather not drive a truckload of guns and ammo into an inferno, I replied.
We've already been getting things ready to go, Bobby said, pointing to a pile of bags and assorted boxes.
I've done the same at our house, Mel added.
Looking at the stack of stuff by the door, I said,
Wow, didn't even notice. You guys have been busy then.
Looking back, I added, But I hope it's all for nothing. I'm really hoping you wasted your time.
Neither of the women looked convinced, but they didn't say anything else about it. After everything we'd done, I was worn out. In the living room, I fell onto the sofa. Thad smiled.
That's a good idea. Think I'll go home and do the same.
Cool, man. See you later, I said.
I passed out within minutes, only waking up when Leanne and Taylor came busting in.
It's so hot out. We need a drink, Taylor said.
How'd it go? I asked, stretching and rubbing my eyes.
Good. We did it like Thad showed us. It wasn't too bad, Leanne replied.
Good deal. About time you girls started pulling your weight around here, I said with a smile.
Hey, we do a lot,
Taylor said from the kitchen.
I'm just teasing.
Better be, Leanne said with a smile.
It was getting close to dinner time, and people started showing up. First was Brandy and Tyler, with all the kids in tow.
Hi, Mom, Little Bit said, coming in.
Mel looked at her. Have you had a bath?
I washed them all up. They were filthy, Brandy said, with a smile. Too much time playing in the mud.
Thanks. I'm sure they needed it.
Thad soon arrived, with Jess, Fred, Eric, and Jeff. The house was filling up quickly. Once Sarge and Mike arrived, the house sounded like a busy restaurant, all pots and pans clanging and chatter and laughter. With so many people, it took nearly every dish in the house to feed everyone. Forming a line, everyone made a pass by the kitchen bar, where Mel and Bobby dished out dinner, handing out plates and bowls as each person passed by. I sat at a table with Sarge, Mike, and Danny. As the sun started to go down, the smoke was hanging closer to the ground, and the acrid smell permeated everything, actually affecting the taste of the meal.
So what's your plan? Back at the camp, you had another idea for a place to try and turn this thing, Sarge said.
I was thinking as I drove along the road to Alexander Springs, but I've been looking at the map and think I've found a better place, I said.
Get on with it, then.
Hang on. I went and retrieved the map I'd taken from the Welcome Center and unrolled it on the table. Right here is a natural gas right-of-way. I think it would be a better spot, I said, running my finger across the map, then pointing to a dark green area. With Lake Door right here and this swamp here, they will be natural buffers to the fire. They'll form a pocket.
That swamp will likely slow the fire some, Mike said.
I nodded. That's what I was thinking. Not enough ground litter to fuel it as fast.
Mike ran his finger along the dotted line that indicated the pipeline.
Start the fire on this side. There isn't a lot to burn on this side of the lake. It could burn around the other side, but then there's this swamp to the east.
Sarge studied the map for a moment.
I think it's our best bet. We'll have to see what happens on the west of the highway, though. That could be a problem. It could burn all the way down through here.
Grabbing another map, I said.
I thought of that, too. Look here.
I ran my finger along a road and another hashed line. It cut a straight line east to west on the western side of Highway 19. This is a forest road with a power line running down it.
That's a really wide-open stretch of sand there. Fire'd have a hard time crossing that, Danny said.
How wide is it? Mike asked.
Couple hundred yards, and it's mostly sand. Only a little brush, Danny replied.
Sarge shook his head.
First thing in the morning, we need to go check this out. If Mikey thinks it will work, we'll give it a try, but everyone needs to be ready to go, just in case.
Tyler and Brandy watched and listened as we talked.
You think it will work? Tyler asked.
It's our only play. It's that or run. Even if it does jump this line, we'll still have time to get out of the way, Sarge replied.
Where will we go? Brandy asked.
We need a rally point, somewhere safe everyone can get to quickly. Once we see where the fire's headed, we can decide where to go from there, Mike said.
How about the sod farm? It's a couple hundred acres of open grassland, no brush of any kind, Danny asked.
That would work. Where is it? Mike asked.
Just across the road there. We could walk to it, I replied.
All right, sod farm it is. If it jumps the line, we'll call on the radio and let everyone here know, and we'll meet them there, Sarge said.
Someone's going to have to man the radio then, Tyler added.
Sarge nodded.
All day. Keep someone in front of it. Let's finish supper and get some rest. I think we're going to need it tomorrow.
While we were eating, Sarge's radio crackled. Ted's voice came through.
What's up, Teddy? There's a Dylan here looking for Morgan.
Tell him to let him through. I'll ride down there and see what's up, I said, getting up from the table.
I'll go with you, Thad said,
taking his plate into the kitchen and setting it in the sink.
Where are you going? Mel asked.
I mean, really, Morg? We haven't seen you all day.
Duty calls. Someone's at the barricade, I said.
Don't go running off anywhere. It's dark.
I smiled and kissed her. I'm not. Just going to go see what he wants. Thad and I went out and used two ATVs to run down to the end of the road. Dylan was talking with Ted and Doc when we pulled up.
What's up, Dylan? I asked as I stepped off the ATV.
Hey, Morgan. I hate to bother you folks. I followed the dogs back.
I waved off his apology.
Don't worry about it, man. What's up?
Have you guys seen anyone around lately? Anyone come by here?
A couple people.
We had a group stop by a few days ago with an old man who acted like their leader. They had a big old truck with a bunch of kids on the back of it.
Yeah, the old guy. That's probably him.
He come around to your place? Thad asked.
Yeah, him and two younger men. The younger guys are the ones that's really bothering me. They keep making dirty comments about Jenna, and it's starting to piss me off. If it was just him, that'd be one thing. But there's always two or three of them when they come.
Why are they coming over? I mean, why do they keep coming back? I asked.
You know Jenna's a sweet soul. She gave them some food the first time they showed up. They had some of the kids with them, and she felt sorry for them. Now they come nearly every day wanting more and more. I wouldn't bother you, but I'm afraid things are about to get dangerous. They've made it pretty clear they need more women, as they put it.
Looking at Ted, I said, I think we can help. Don't you think so? Let's call Sarge up here. Ted nodded and called Sarge on the radio. It wasn't long before the Hummer pulled up with Sarge and Mike. I introduced the other guys to Dylan, and they all shook hands.
What can we do for you? Sarge asked.
I relayed Dylan's story to him, adding in the confrontation we had with the same people. When I finished the details, he stroked his chin.
Sounds like a bunch of troublemakers. The types we don't need around here. I think we can help you.
I sure would appreciate it.
How can I let you know when they show up?
Oh, you won't have to do that. We'll just be there, Sarge replied.
Yeah, we'll just post up over there, Ted replied, then looked at me. You've got enough people here to keep an eye on your place, don't you?
Yeah, we can cover things here.
Dylan was looking at the men and the Hummer, eyes narrowed. Finally, he had to ask,
Who are you guys?
We're just some friends of these guys, Sarge replied.
Dylan looked at the Hummer.
Damn, sure wish I had friends like you guys.
Sarge smiled.
You do now.
What kind of guns do you have? Ted asked. Dylan pointed to the revolver on his hip.
I've got this and a shotgun.
Oh, shit, that's all? I asked.
Yeah, just never really was into guns before. Wish I had been now.
I'll be right back, I said, as I hopped back on the ATV and headed for the house. Danny met me on the porch.
What's up?
Remember that group that came up in here the other night? Danny nodded. They're giving Dylan and Jenna some trouble.
I figured we'd see them again, Danny said.
Yeah, and Dylan doesn't have much in the way of guns either. He's afraid they've got the idea in their heads to try something with Jenna.
Let's go get them some hardware, I said, going into the house.
We stood in front of the closet looking in.
What should we give him? Danny asked.
I guess a rifle or two and a couple of handguns.
Let's give them two of the same, Danny said.
Reaching into the closet, he picked up two AKs. He sorted through the pistols and came up with a couple of Smith & Wesson M&Ps and 9mm. While he was getting the guns out, I went through the piles of ammo and mags, getting a couple for the pistols, two each, and a half dozen AK mags. We put the ammo and mags in a pillowcase and headed back out.
I'll come with you, he said, as we passed through the living room.
What's going on? Mel asked.
Just giving some guns to someone who needs them.
Don't get into anything tonight, she half pleaded. I turned around.
I'm not going anywhere, I said, and smiled.
You better not. Danny and I hurried back down to the barricade. I handed the pillowcase to Dylan.
Here, take this with you.
Dylan looked in the bag, then at me.
What's this?
You need more firepower. Take these too, Danny said, holding up the rifles.
You know how to use those? Sarge asked.
Dylan took one of the rifles.
Yeah, it's been a long time, but I remember.
Good. Hop into the truck and we'll give you a ride to your place, Sarge said.
You want me to go?
Ted asked.
Sarge shook his head.
Nah, me and Mikey will go. You guys need to get some food in you.
Ted, you guys go back. Me and Danny will stay here, I said.
Are you guys going to stay at our place? Dylan asked.
We sure are. You and your missus can get some sleep tonight. We'll keep an eye on things for you, Sarge replied.
I appreciate that, but our place is small.
Sarge cut him off.
We're not going to be inside. We'll stay in the truck. You don't have to worry about us.
The old man had a glint in his eye.
I don't know what to say. Thank you, though. I haven't had a good night's sleep in days, Dylan replied.
Well, let's get going then, Sarge said, clapping his hands. You guys can catch some Z's, and we'll catch some predators.
Sarge gave us a wave as he maneuvered through the barricade.
You guys run down to the house and get something to eat. Tell Bobby and Mel we're going to stay down here and get someone sent up to relieve us later, Danny said.
Will do. I'm hungry, Doc said.
Ted got on the ATV, telling Doc to get on the back. When Doc got on, Ted turned his head.
Hold on tight, darling.
Just drive. I'm not going to hug you no matter how bad you want it, Doc replied, making Ted laugh.
Once everyone was gone, it was eerily quiet. The smoke was getting worse, burning my eyes and throat. I pulled a bandana out of my vest, then a canteen. After pouring some water on the bandana, I wrapped it around my face, looking for some relief.
You got another one of those? Danny asked.
I nodded and pulled out the spare I had in my vest.
Thanks, man. Anything to help right now, he said.
Man, I wish that would have worked.
I wish we stopped up there on 40, Danny said.
Me too, as if there isn't enough shit to deal with. Like what Mel was saying earlier, what's next, you know?
I know all too well, brother. It's just one thing after another. I'd give anything to go back to how it was before.
We used to bitch about working and all the other bullshit that went along with a normal life, Danny replied.
No shit.
I'd go to work today nailing shingles if things would just go back to normal. And you know how much I hate roofing, I said with a chuckle.
Not as much as plumbing, Danny laughed. Sanitary, just drains.
Well, if tomorrow doesn't do it, we're in for a hard time. Where do you want to go? I imagine the cabins will be gone, so they won't be an option.
I shook my head. I have no idea.
We're going to be like everyone else, I guess. On the road.
At least we've got the trucks, Danny replied.
If we can keep them. On the road, everyone's going to want them, and we'll have no security at all.
All the more reason to make sure we don't have to leave.
We have to get it done tomorrow. There's no other choice.
We sat there for some time in the quiet, as flakes of ash fell around us. I looked up into the murky sky.
You think it'll ever get easier?
Easier? I thought this was easy, Danny laughed.
Yeah, it's easy. Between wildfires, raiders, and murders, and trying not to starve to death, I can't imagine it possibly being any easier.
All we can do is what we can do, Danny replied.
But there's so much to do.
It seemed as if the haze hastened the setting of the sun, the looming dusk giving everything an otherworldly look. We went across the street, taking up a place on the fence. Out there, on the edge of the pasture, we could take advantage of what breeze there may be and get a little relief from the mosquitoes. We sat in the eerie quiet in silence. Not even crickets were playing their evening arias. To the north, the sky was angry and ominous in both attitude and appearance, as if the very earth itself was seeking its vengeance for some injury. And maybe it was. Here at last, man was knocked down a peg or two. Without the benefit of all his technology, man was reduced to clawing at the earth for his own survival, nearly on par with most of the beasts of the wild. Danny was pulling up the seed stalks of St. Augustine and biting off the soft, sweet tips, then throwing the stalks like arrows.
You know, he said, nibbling on a stalk, we have very little chance of stopping that thing.
Yeah, but what are we supposed to do? All we can do is try.
Danny stretched his arms out and put his hands behind his head. And try we will.
Chapter 13. As the convoy approached Morgan's neighborhood, Jamie could see someone waving. None of the drivers of the other trucks paid any attention, as they'd been instructed not to stop for civilians. But to Jamie, this was different. She knew these people. She pulled out of the line and stopped as Jeff jogged over.
Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Jeff, what's up?
He pointed to a woman with two kids standing behind him.
Can you give them a ride into town? She wants to go stay with her sister.
Who is she?
Jeff leaned in a little closer. In a low voice, he replied,
Her husband was killed down the road here. Morgan and Danny got the guy who did it, and we buried both of them. She's just kind of stuck here.
It wasn't a hard decision for her.
Yeah, tell her to get in.
The guardsman sitting in the passenger seat leaned over.
Hey, we're not supposed to give anyone a ride.
Jamie shot him a disgusted look. What the hell could it possibly hurt? It's just a ride. He was clearly annoyed by her answer, but he didn't say anything more. Jeff waved Kathy and the kids over, helping them get into the truck. The two little ones shared one of the rear seats. To them, it was a grand adventure to ride in the big army truck.
Thanks, Jamie, Jeff said, waving goodbye to Kathy.
Jamie pulled off at the rear of the convoy, the last truck in line. As they rode along, Kathy didn't say anything, and Jamie didn't press her. From what Jeff said, she'd had a rough time lately, and there was no sense in making her relive it. As they approached the barricade on the edge of town, Jamie asked where her sister lived. Kathy directed her past the armory, getting some curious looks from some of the other guardsmen as they continued on. Kathy eventually told her to stop in front of a small house. She quickly got out and walked up to the house and rapped on the door.
After a moment, it opened a crack, then swung wide open as a woman rushed out and they embraced in a hug. The two women, still holding each other, walked out to the street. Kathy opened the door and the kids hopped out, both hugging their aunt. Kathy stepped around to the driver's door.
"Thank you for bringing me here. I can't thank you enough."
Jamie smiled, warmed by the interaction.
"No problem. Hope you and the kids are safe here."
"Oh, we will be. Thank you again." Jamie gave her a smile and waved as she pulled away. The ride back to the armory was short, and in no time, she was parking the Hummer with the others in the lot. As night began to fall, all the vehicles were crowded into the small fenced yard. It was alive with rumbling engines as the drivers attempted to jockey them into position. People moved through the clouds of exhaust in a dangerous, unscripted choreography. Jamie sat on a large metal box, an open canteen in her hands. Seeing Ian walking through the yard, she waved him over.
"Hey, Jamie."
"Hey, got a question for you."
"Sure, what's up?"
Jamie looked around for a moment, then asked, "Do you want to stay here?"
"Or go where?"
Ian asked with half a laugh.
"Sarge and those guys are staying over in that neighborhood where Morgan lives. We could go there."
"That place is probably going to burn down. Why aren't they coming here?"
"You really think it's going to burn? Damn, I was thinking it would be better."
Ian removed his cover and scratched at his head.
"You don't want to stay here?"
"Not really. We're going to be packed in here like sardines, way too many musty balls for me."
Ian started to laugh.
"Musty?"
"Yeah, you dumbasses stink,"
Jamie replied with a smile. "I was going to see if Perez wanted to go too."
"I guess we could."
Ian looked around. "There isn't going to be much going on around here." He looked at her seriously for a moment.
"You're not worried about being AWOL?"
"AWOL? Hell no. There's no DOD anymore."
Thinking quickly, she added, "Besides, we could just say we're attached to Sarge and his guys. He's got actual contact up the command chain.
Long as we're with him, we're not absent."
"You got a point there."
"Think about it. Just don't say anything to anyone. I'll talk to Perez," Jamie said.
"We have to wait and see what happens with the fire. If that works out, I'm good with it," Ian replied.
Jamie found Perez by accident. Walking through the parked trucks, she smelled smoke of a different variety and pulled the canvas flap back on one of the trucks. Perez was sitting there, smoking a cigarette, which he quickly tried to hide.
"Where the hell did you get a cigarette?"
she asked.
"You scared the shit out of me," Perez smiled.
"I got my ways," he said, taking a long drag on the smoke.
Jamie climbed up in the truck with him.
"Give me one of those."
Perez squinted at her and reluctantly pulled a pack from his blouse pocket, shaking one out.
"Didn't know you smoked."
"I don't, but I could use one right now."
Jamie stared at him for a second.
"Light?"
Perez produced a lighter, and Jamie leaned in and lit her cigarette, taking a long drag.
"Oh, that's good."
She looked at it.
"Where did you find these?"
"We found a shit ton of them at the camp when we were going through stuff."
"You get your share?"
Perez smiled.
"Plenty."
"I wanted to ask you something."
Perez looked over, and Jamie went into her offer. Perez listened intently, without interrupting her, staring at the floor. When she finished, she asked,
"What do you think?
You don't want to stay here?"
"No. Do you really want to stay here?
What do you think we'll be doing, packed in here like we are? It's going to suck."
"Yeah, I was already thinking of camping out here. That damn hall is going to get rank quick."
"I know.
Over there, we can stay in a house, away from all these people who think we're here to save them when we don't have shit for them. Soon as they figure out we're not giving them anything, they're not going to be so nice anymore. I'd rather be out in the woods."
"What'd Ian say?"
"He was up for it."
Perez sighed.
"What the hell? I'm in too."
"We'll have to wait and see what happens with the fire. There's a chance their place could burn.
Once that's over, we'll see. I'm going to go look for Ian.
Perez pulled the pack from his pocket, shaking out another.
You do that. I'll be right here.
As Jamie walked through the yard, members of the unit were setting up their spots for the night. Small tents and combat shelters were being put up on any available ground. Jamie worked her way through the chaos, looking for Ian. Occasionally, she would ask where Ian was, but it quickly became obvious no one knew. After searching the yard, she went into the hall where others were laying out sleep mats and bags. In the admin section of the building, she heard Ian's voice coming down the hall. Not wanting to interrupt, she paused at the end of the hall and leaned against the wall. After a short time, Ian appeared in the hallway. As he walked up, Jamie asked,
"What was that about?"
"I told them we were going to leave if the fire doesn't burn the place to the ground," Ian replied, matter-of-factly.
"What? Why would you do that?"
He looked at her like she was nuts.
"Because it was the right thing to do. What was your plan? Steal a Hummer and drive away?"
Jamie shrugged.
"It was a thought."
"Yeah, a bad one. Right now, it's just wait and see." Stunned, Jamie stepped in front of him.
"Really? They didn't care?"
"They cared, but understood. There's already too many people here, and getting rid of a couple of us will ease the burden a bit.
I can't believe they let it go so easy."
"Well, I told them having us out there would serve as a remote post. With us and Sarge and his guys, it's a decent squad," Ian replied.
"I thought they didn't want them around anymore."
"No more than the regular army generally wants SF types around. You know, those guys generally don't play by the rules and can be a bit of a pain in the ass. But they know they'll need their help at some point."
"This worked out better than I thought it would."
"Yeah, and we don't burn any bridges here. We'll probably need their help someday, too."
"That's good. Better. I sure hope they get through it," Jamie said.
"Let's just hope it goes well."
"Cool. I'll go tell Perez. He set up camp in the back of an empty truck. I'm going to stay there, too."
Jamie went to the Hummer and grabbed her pack. Perez had his gear in the back of the truck, and she decided she was going to stay there with him, out of sight, out of mind. When she climbed in, Perez was stretched out in his sleeping bag.
"Well?" Perez asked, looking up.
"It's a go. They're actually going along with it. Ian sold the captain on the idea of having us as a squad out there."
Perez lay back.
"Good.
I'm staying here tonight."
"Whatever blows your skirt up."
"Nice, Perez. Real nice," Jamie said as she unrolled her bag.
Dylan was worried about leaving Jenna home alone, but he didn't know what else to do after being faced with day after day of intimidation from these troublemakers. He was relieved when the house came into view as they bounced down the dirt road. Sarge swung the truck in a loop, stopping with it facing back the way they'd come. Dylan quickly hopped out and walked to the house. At the door, he knocked.
"Jenna, it's me."
A muffled voice replied, and the door opened.
"Is everything all right?" he asked.
"I'm just happy you're back."
Jenna looked past him at the Hummer.
"Who's that?"
"They're friends of Morgan's. They're going to stay here and help us. I'll introduce you to them."
Looking at the Hummer, she asked,
"Are they in the army or something?"
"I don't know, but they sure look like it."
Mike and Sarge were leaning on the hood of the Hummer. Seeing Dylan and his wife approach, they stood up.
"Ma'am?"
Sarge said with a nod.
"Sarge, Mike, this is my wife, Jenna," Dylan said.
"Hi, Jenna. Nice to meet you," Mike said.
Sarge smiled.
"Call me Linus."
"I can't thank you guys enough for coming here. I had no idea we'd get this kind of help. I'm really getting worried. The way they look at me, the crude comments they make."
She shuddered visibly.
"We'll do what we can for you. We should be able to convince them to leave you alone," Sarge replied.
"That sure would be nice. At first I didn't mind helping them, but now they come back every day wanting more."
Kind of like a stray dog. Once you feed it, it'll keep coming back.
She has a soft spot for dogs, too, Dylan added.
Well, the big dogs are here now, Mike said.
It's been hard. They come at night, every night. And they've been threatening. Every day they want more, always more. Been hard to sleep, Dylan said.
You folks can get some sleep tonight. We'll keep an eye on things, Sarge said.
Would you guys like some coffee? Jenna asked.
Sarge perked right up. Just hearing the word had a stimulating effect.
Coffee? You got coffee?
Well, it's not all coffee. I grow chicory in the greenhouse, and I cut my real coffee with it. It's still pretty good, Jenna replied.
Like Café du Monde in New Orleans, Sarge replied.
Jenna smiled.
That's where I got the idea. We spent a week down there a few years ago and really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I had them little pastries every day we were there, Dylan said with a smile.
Be glad you're not there now. I can only imagine what that place looks like, Mike added.
Can you imagine? Every day would be like the aftermath of Katrina, Dylan replied, shaking his head.
How do those poor people live? Not just there, but in any big city, Jenna asked.
Wouldn't be easy. Nothing to hunt, and not too many places for a garden. Not to mention, once you planted a garden, you'd have to guard it 24 hours a day, Sarge said.
There's plenty to hunt. Pigeons, squirrels, all manner of cats and dogs.
Delicious, Mike said.
Sarge shook his head.
You'll have to forgive him. He was kicked in the head as a child.
Laughing, Jenna said, you boys are silly.
Miss Jenna, if you wouldn't mind bringing out some of that coffee, you folks can go on and get some rest, Sarge said.
Sure thing. I'll put a fresh pot on, Jenna replied, and headed back for the house.
Thanks for coming over here. I know this is going to get worse. They started saying things about Jenna, nasty things. She's got MS and isn't well. And the things they were saying, Dylan trailed off.
Don't worry, Dylan. We don't take to people that try and bully others or people that hurt women.
The two together is at the top of my shit list, Sarge replied.
Dylan looked up.
Well, tonight, in all probability, you'll see some shit. These people are horrible, and I think they're doing some terrible things to the kids they've got.
We'll have to see about that, too, then, Sarge replied with a stern face.
I'll go help Jenna with that coffee, Dylan said, and went to the house.
What do you think? Just sit here and wait, or do you want to move off where they won't see us? Mike asked.
I was thinking of sitting here and letting them come up. The truck might scare them off. Plus, I want to see what they got to say when they get here. After they bring the coffee out, move the truck around back. Let's see how this plays out.
Roger that, boss.
Dylan came out carrying a thermos and two coffee cups. He set them on the hood of the truck.
Here you guys go.
Thanks, Mike said, as he picked up a cup, looking into it.
Hey, can you drink coffee out of something this clean? He asked, looking at Sarge.
I can drink all this coffee from a clean cup, Sarge smiled back, pouring himself a cup.
Mike looked at Dylan.
You should see the cups he uses. Our medic wouldn't even use them.
Laughing, Dylan replied,
Nothing like a seasoned cup, is there?
You got that right. Now, Dylan, we got you covered tonight. Go get some rest, Sarge said, and watched Dylan walk to the house.
After he was inside, Sarge looked at Mike.
Give him a few minutes and move the truck.
Mike leaned against the hood and poured himself a cup. He took a sip, smacking his lips.
Well, that's different.
Suck it up. Best coffee I've had in a long time.
It's the only coffee you've had in a long time.
Exactly,
Sarge replied, draining his cup and refilling it.
Move your shit. I'm gonna move this thing, Mike said.
Sarge grabbed the thermos, and Mike pulled the truck around behind the greenhouse. Sarge met him on his way back.
Let's set up under these juniper trees, he said, pointing to a row of trees along the fence.
Moving under the trees, they took a seat in the soft litter of fallen needles.
"Get comfy, sweetheart,"
Sarge said, as he broke off a couple of small limbs from the trunk of the tree. Mike sat quietly, using his NVGs to keep an eye out. Having gone so long without any caffeine, the chicory coffee was producing a hell of a buzz, so staying awake wasn't going to be an issue for him. Feeling as energized as he was, Mike was surprised to hear a small snore come out of the old man after about an hour of observation. He looked over to see Sarge's chin on his chest. He kicked his boot, waking him up. Ordinarily, he would have given him hell for falling asleep, but they had to be quiet. Mike was then hit with a realization. His mentor was getting older. He had a lot of respect for Sarge, having spent years under his tutelage, but the undeniable fact was that he was moving into his twilight years. With age, things changed, whether you wanted them to or not. Mike could see Sarge's silhouette in the darkness, stretching. Smiling to himself, Mike decided to let it go. If the old man needed a nap, he could have one. It was about midnight when the visitors showed up. Sarge saw them first, tapping Mike's leg to indicate that he had them in his sights. Through the NVGs, they watched them approach, walking up the dirt road as though they didn't have a care in the world. There were three of them, all carrying some sort of long gun. As they approached, Sarge whispered to Mike,
"Wait for them to get to the door. Let's hear what they've got to say."
"How do you want to take them down?"
"You still got that taser?"
"Yeah," Mike replied.
"Well, just knock two of them in the head. Give that third one a jolt if need be."
Mike nodded. As the visitors came closer to the house, they could hear their conversation.
"They better have more today. I told them last time what they gave us wasn't enough," one of them said.
"Why don't we just move in here? It's better than that shitty-ass trailer we're in."
"Soon enough. The more we get out of them now, the better for us. If we move in on them too soon, they'll just try and shut down. Right now, they're growing a lot of vegetables. When that's all ready to harvest, we'll take it."
"Let them do the work for us," an older man replied.
"We could just take them and make them do the work. It's worked before."
"Yeah, I got a job for that little bitch," one of the men said with a laugh.
"You ain't the only one. I want some new pussy, too."
"If your pecker was an inch longer, you'd get some new pussy with what we got now," the old man responded, causing the other man to laugh. Sarge's blood boiled at the callous way they were talking about Jenna. Mike could see his clenched jaw in the darkness. Two of the men hung back as the older man approached the house and pounded on the door. After a moment, he pounded again.
"Don't make me wait too long," he shouted.
Shortly, a dim yellow light flickered in the windows. Dylan stood in the doorway and looked out, looking around. The old man looked around, too.
"What you looking for? I'm right here."
"Nothing, just looking around."
"Where's my groceries?"
Irked, Dylan replied.
"Let me go get them."
"Send that sexy little piece of ass out with him," one of the other two men called, getting a belly laugh from his partner. Dylan glared at the man. The old man urged him on.
"What? You gonna do something about it? Don't get stupid. Just go get what's ours, and we'll be on our way."
Dylan quickly returned with a plastic shopping bag, handing it to the old man. He took the bag and hefted it.
"What's this shit? This ain't enough for us."
"Look, we gotta eat too. We can't provide all your food." As they were talking, Sarge motioned to Mike, and they slowly and quietly started to move out of their hide. They deftly made their way toward the open gate as the old man continued.
"I told you the last time we needed more, and this isn't even as much as we got then. You're going in the wrong direction. Get back in there and find us something else."
"It's all we have until some of the other plants in the garden are ready. I'm not going to starve so you can eat. I grow this food. Be glad you're getting anything," Dylan spat back.
"What'd you say?"
one of the other men barked,
as he walked toward the house. You got a smart mouth on you. Now get your ass back in there and get us the rest of it.
The third man was obviously hyped up, bouncing on the balls of his feet. Sarge motioned to Mike that he would take this one, and for him to move quickly on the other two. Mike nodded as they closed the last couple of yards. In a swift motion, Sarge planted the butt of his carbine into the base of the man's skull as Mike moved quickly for the other two. The sound of the first one falling caused the second man to begin to turn. Mike caught him just above his ear with the butt of his rifle, toppling the man. The older man was startled by the sudden violence and tried to bring his rifle up, but Mike swung the butt of the carbine back, hitting him in the teeth. Staggering, the old man dropped his rifle and reached for his face. Taking a moment, Mike searched the two men for additional weapons, pushing the old man down to the ground. He removed their rifles and tossed them into the yard. When he finished, Dylan and Jenna came out the door, each carrying an AK.
Dylan, keep an eye on them two. Mike, go pull the truck around here and put some light on our subjects.
Mike nodded and trotted off to get the Hummer. Dylan was imbued with rage. Kicking one of the men, he shouted at him,
You sons of bitches! Who do you think you are?
The old man was lying in the grass, moaning. From the way he sounded, his mouth suffered some serious injury.
What the hell's going on?
He mumbled. Mike pulled up in the Hummer. Flipping on the high beams, the yard was flooded with light. The old man shielded his face from the light as he looked back over his shoulder. The first man, the one Sarge took down initially, was also coming around, sitting up in the grass and holding his head.
What the hell is going on?
He asked as he rubbed the back of his head. Sarge stood in front of the old man.
Get out there with your partner,
Sarge said, pointing with the muzzle of his carbine. When the old man didn't respond, Sarge kicked his thigh.
Get your ass moving! Get out there!
The old man raised a hand in submission and began crawling across the yard.
You too,
Mike said to the other man, giving him a motivating kick to the ass.
You boys are in the wrong business. It's time someone showed you the error of your ways,
Sarge said.
Who the hell are you?
The man struck in the back of the head asked.
A life lesson incarnate, Sarge replied. You've been taking advantage of these good folks here, and that's done now.
We gotta eat too,
the old man said, spitting blood into the grass.
True, you do. But you can't take it from someone else. You need to find your own way.
The old man was holding his jaw. Looking up, he said,
You can take. You have to take.
Sarge grunted.
You can, huh? You just go around taking what you want?
The old man looked up at Sarge, grinning.
We take what there is to be taken. Survival of the fittest.
You bastards are done taking from me, Dylan said, then spat at him.
The question now is, what are we to do with you?
Sarge said.
We got your message. We won't be back, the old man said.
Like hell,
one of the others muttered. The old man looked at him and shook his head slightly.
And there's the problem with shit like you. Instead of seeing the error of your ways, you're just going to want to get even. That only leaves us with one option, Sarge said.
The old man squinted into the light.
Oh, yeah? What's that? To put you somewhere so you can't bother anyone else.
The fucking dirt, Mike said sternly. The reality of the situation suddenly struck them.
What? Are you crazy? We haven't hurt anyone.
One of the younger men bellowed. Sarge snorted.
I find that hard to believe. You may not have hurt these folks, but I'm pretty sure you have hurt people in the past, and, left unchecked, you will in the future.
We only do what we have to. It's a hard life now.
We've got a bunch of kids we're taking care of. They need to eat, the old man said.
Where'd the kids come from? Sarge asked.
Here and there.
We find them and take them in. We're doing the world a service, taking them youngins in.
How many of their parents did you kill? Sarge asked.
The old man made eye contact with the other two, but none of them replied.
Where's the rest of your group?
With a snicker, the old man replied,
You really don't expect me to answer that.
I didn't ask it to hear myself talk. Where are they?
We ain't telling you shit,
one of the younger men barked.
Sarge waved Dylan over and whispered into his ear. Dylan nodded and disappeared back in the house. The three on the ground watched him go, unsure of what was happening. When Dylan reappeared, he was carrying a hammer.
What the hell are you going to do with that? One of the young men asked.
Sarge took the 4-pound mini sledge from Dylan and held it up.
It's called negative reinforcement.
What?
The old man looked over at his partner.
It means he's going to bash you with it, jackass. Whether or not you get hit with it is totally up to you. Now, where's the rest of your group? Sarge asked.
We can't tell you that.
You wouldn't tell us if the shoe was on the other foot, the old man replied.
I admire your tenacity, but you know we can't just let you go, Sarge said, letting out a long breath.
I give you my word, we won't come back. We'll be on our way, the old man said.
Sarge knelt down in front of the man.
You know, I would really like to believe you. I really would. But would you believe me if, as you said, the shoe was on the other foot?
The old man looked at the grass and slowly shook his head.
No, I wouldn't.
Where's that leave us, then?
I reckon that's up to you.
Just let us go. We won't bother them again,
one of the other men said.
Maybe not, but you'll find someone else to steal from, to intimidate, Mike said.
Sarge pointed to the old man.
What's your name?
Name's Claude,
pointing to the younger men, he said.
That's Billy, and that's David.
All right, Claude, you three, get on your feet, Sarge barked.
As they stood, the old man asked,
Where are we going?
Out there to that truck. Go on, grab that push bar there,
Sarge said, pointing to the tubular push bar on the front of the Hummer. Wearily, the three men moved out to the truck. Sarge told Mike to get some of the heavy zip ties from the back of the truck. Using these, they tied the men's hands to the bar.
What are you doing?
One of the younger men cried.
The way I see it, we only have two choices here. Either I kill you, which honestly is my first choice, because that way I know you won't be back. Or I fix you so you can't hurt anyone, Sarge said.
The old man gripped the bar.
And how are you going to do that?
Sarge set the hammer on the hood of the truck, resting it on its head, with the handle upright. The old man closed his eyes tight.
Get on with it.
You can't do this,
David shouted, and tried to pull against the tie wrap, but it was useless. There was no way he was getting his hand out. Sarge gripped the hammer.
It's this, or a hole in the ground.
Why the hell are you doing this? Billy cried.
If you can't hold a weapon, you aren't a threat, are you? You know, in the Middle East, they cut your hands off for stealing.
I'm not going to cut your hand off, Sarge replied.
Just smash it, Claude muttered.
We weren't stealing. They gave us the stuff, Billy pleaded.
Like we had a choice. You three showed up here with guns after we did freely give you some food. You came back with guns and told us to give you more and more.
Every day it's more,
Dylan said, then stepped around them so he could see their faces. Pointing into the face of one of the younger men, he added,
And I heard what you said about my wife, too.
And I heard what you said earlier, Mike said. Disgusting.
Billy looked at him. It was just talk. Please don't do this.
Not used to being the ones begging, are you? Dylan asked.
Sarge took the hammer from the hood and gripped Claude's wrist.
Remember, you brought this on yourself.
Claude closed his eyes and grit his teeth. Sarge raised the hammer and brought it down on the knuckles of his right hand, resulting in a sickening thud and crunch. Claude's knees buckled as he let out a scream of pain. Raising the hammer again, Sarge delivered the left hand a similar blow. Again, Claude emitted a howl of pain as his knees gave completely and he slumped against the front of the truck, moaning. The other two men began to violently struggle against their bonds, screaming profanities they fought to get loose. Mike drew the taser. Removing the cartridge from it, he placed it against David's neck and hit the trigger. David went rigid as a result of the voltage coursing through him. Sarge used the opportunity to deliver the first blow. Through the incapacitation, he still managed to scream, a blood-curdling screech that rose in pitch. After 5 seconds, the taser timed out, and before he could recover, Sarge brought the hammer down on his other hand. This time, the scream was more forceful, filled with agony. Billy, having seen what awaited him, was blubbering. He had wet himself and begged for relief from what surely awaited him. Jenna stood on the porch, her hands covering her face. The mechanical approach the old soldier displayed was horrifying. He was maiming men with no more thought, it appeared, than one would have about swatting a fly. The smoke now hanging low to the ground only added to the surreal scene, like something from a horror movie. Not able to take any more, she went in the house and shut the door. Once Mike placed the taser to Billy's neck, he started to shout, but was cut off by the application of voltage. Sarge quickly grabbed his right wrist and delivered the two blows swiftly and efficiently. Just as the first two had, Billy let out wails of pain, slumping to the ground. Sarge stepped back and looked at the three men. The blows had been savage. Blood ran down their arms and dripped from their limp fingers. Bones were obviously broken, as well as any number of blood vessels.
"Cut them loose, Mac," Sarge said, setting the bloody hammer on the hood of the truck.
Mike used a pair of EMT shears to cut the ties. It took some maneuvering to get them into position, causing even more pain for those involved. Once cut loose, Mike and Sarge stood the men up, leaning them against the truck.
"You boys can be on your way now. Be glad you're leaving with your lives," Sarge said.
With gritted teeth, Claude looked at his hands.
"You've killed us. It'll just take longer."
"That's up to you and your group, ain't it? Next time, you might come up against a group that will kill you. Taking from others isn't going to get you far."
"Come on, boys,"
the old man croaked. The three started to stagger off, holding their injured hands out in front of them like a surgeon after scrubbing up. Sarge, Mike, and Dylan watched them disappear into the darkness. Once they were gone, Dylan said,
"You think they'll die from that?"
"Could, but probably not. They got other people with their group that can take care of them. Speaking of which, Mikey, follow them and see where they go," Sarge said.
Mike lowered NVGs down over his eyes and started following them, disappearing into the murk. Sarge and Dylan stood in awkward silence for a moment. Then Sarge asked,
"You all right?"
Dylan nodded.
"Yeah, just not what I expected."
"What'd you expect? You wanted to kill them?"
Dylan shook his head.
"No, I don't really know what I expected. It just seemed brutal."
"It's a brutal world. This is how things are now. The rules are what you make them. They had their own rules, coming here and taking from you. We just made new rules."
"Don't get me wrong, I appreciate it, but it was just that seeing it made it different."
"Always is."
Dylan pointed off in the direction Mike went.
"What's he going to do?"
"I want to know where they're staying so we can keep an eye on them. If they don't move out soon, we'll move them out."
"They aren't a threat anymore,
They can't hurt anyone now.
We don't know that. How many more are back there, do you know?
Dylan shook his head.
Guess I don't.
I think you should go check on Jenna. I'll be out here for the rest of the night. Mike will be back soon.
Sarge retrieved his thermos and returned to the truck. After pouring himself a cup, he rested on the hood, sipping the coffee and staring into the darkness. Mike stayed far enough behind the three men that they wouldn't see him should they venture a look. It really wasn't a worry, though, as they were too consumed with their injuries. Their hands were useless to them. They couldn't so much as unzip their flies to take a piss. The three staggered along, heading on the paved road toward Altoona. From time to time, Mike could hear the men say something, sometimes words, sometimes cries of pain. Their lamentations had no effect on Mike. He felt nothing for their plight. If they hadn't been out with nefarious intentions, they wouldn't be in their current situation. Eventually, the men turned onto a small, dirt drive. Mike made a quick dash so as to keep them in view. They were approaching a small trailer, dim yellow light filling the windows. As they walked down the drive, Mike saw their watch before they did. He was sitting on a bucket beside a small shed. Hearing people approach, he quickly ran up to the men, then shouted at the house. The door opened and others came out. Mike used the commotion to get closer to the house, staying inside the brush to conceal himself. As he crept closer, he was able to hear them talk. The three were retelling the story, their version anyway. The other members of the group were understandably upset at the injuries, and talk of vengeance filled the air. Three of them said they would head back to the house and get those bastards. Mike quietly chuckled to himself. They'd never see the house or Mike before he shot them. It was the old man who stopped them from this plan.
No one's going anywhere.
What do you mean? We can't let them get away with this, another replied.
In the glow of the NVGs, Mike saw the man raise his hands.
These aren't the kind of men to trifle with. We've done what we need to do to survive, and we are the ones who usually put people in their places. Tonight, we came against hard men. We didn't even know they were there till it was too late. That older man had no emotion in his eyes. I don't know how many of them there are, but they're dangerous. Going back would only result in people dying.
The group remained silent as their sage spoke.
What are we supposed to do then?
Leave. Leave as soon as we can, the old man said, looking back down the dark drive. For all we know, they're out there now.
I say bullshit. We can't let these people scare us off, another group member said.
The old man held his hands up.
Do you see this? He shouted. We could be dead.
He looked around.
We've met our match. It's time to move on.
Smart move, Mike whispered to himself. The group went into the trailer, and Mike waited for a while to see if they would stay inside or not. He hoped they would. He didn't feel like dealing with them. He was tired and wanted some sleep. After another hour, when no one appeared, he made his way back to the house. Sarge was leaning on the hood of the Hummer.
They're not coming back, Mike said as he walked up.
Good. Where are they?
Just down the road a ways, in a trailer. There's probably eight of them.
I figured they'd try for some payback.
Oh, they wanted to, but the old man had a sudden burst of common sense. Told him if they did, they would more than likely die. He said they'd met their match.
Good. Doesn't seem like they're going to try anything, Sarge said.
Mike laughed.
Nope. They're probably scared shitless.
What do you want to do?
Let's call it a night.
Chapter 14. After finishing the watch, I sat on the porch for a while, thinking over our plan. The smoke drove me inside faster than I thought. Not that it was much of a relief inside. As the weather was warming, we were keeping the windows open, but the smell of smoke was inescapable. My head was swirling with thoughts of the next day, but I knew that having a good night's rest could only benefit me, so I tried to shut off my brain. I quietly got into bed next to Mel, pulling the sheet over my head for a little relief. One of the girls coughed, and it broke my heart. I drifted off to sleep, fitfully. Pounding on the door jerked me from my slumber. Grabbing my pistol, I quickly went to the door. "Who is it?" I shouted. "It's me," Sarge's voice boomed back. "Open the damn door!"
"Who is it?"
Mel asked, coming into the living room with a pistol.
"It's the old man!"
"What the hell, man?" "It sounded like the police were here," I said, opening the door. "You're at..."